There are so many women out there that are taking a stand against gender inequality and are paving the way for the future generation. Ordinary women that are creating a more inclusive and powerful society, free from stereotypes, racism and sexism. And I'm here to share their stories with all of you. Stay tuned, because this is WEN Power, your source of inspiring, powerful and positive stories. And I'm here to discover how we can change the narrative, one story at a time. I am your host, Ilaria Biancacci, journalist and founder of WEN Power. Hello and welcome to a new episode of WEN Power Podcast. I'm here today with Jana Spencer. She's a journalist, women's rights activist, and the founder of Tamu Bakery, a nonprofit empowering survivors of gender-based violence. Thank you, Jana, so much for being with us today. It's really a pleasure to have you as a guest on WEN Power Podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure too.
So I will take you straight into this interview with a question that I like to ask all my guests. And it's, Jana, what is that you're fighting for today?
I'm fighting probably not to stop gender-based violence around the world, because it's a big, big kind of subject and a theme. And I realize that it's very difficult to say that we can stop it, but probably raise awareness about gender-based violence. And fighting for stopping all the cultural, religious, you know, myths, which is attached to a lot of parts of, or a lot of types of gender-based violence around the world.
As you say, this is a very big mission, so we can just maybe take little steps towards raising awareness and make a change, but I think it will take very long time to the moment where we can actually see that all the women are free, you know, to be and to live in this planet with no constriction, with no violence, with no so I think it's a great mission and requires a lot of people to help you and to support you in this journey, not just you, but you know, every other activist that is fighting against gender-based violence. And you have a very interesting career, because you started out as a journalist, but then when you opened Tamu Bakery and you decided to work to empower women survivors of gender-based violence, you transitioned more into an activist role. So do you want to tell us a little bit more about who was Jana growing up and being a journalist, and how you transitioned into this other role that you created for yourself?
Yes, you know, there is a lot of, I would say, similarities between journalism and activism, or fighting for human rights or for women's rights, because it is, like I always say, especially to people who are just starting in both of these fields, it's working with people and working for people. I was growing up in a family where a traditional profession was lawyer or police officer. And I was thinking that I'm going to follow the footsteps of both of my father and grandfather. And as far as I was concerned, I was basically graduating from school. And about 2 months before graduation, I was thinking that still I'm going to go and follow his career. I was preparing to enter lawyer faculty of university. But 2 months before my graduation, I received a letter saying that I won a big creative writing competition in my native Ukraine. And my dad had a serious conversation with me, and he said, "Do you really want to enter this very stressful career like me, like my dad? I think you are great at writing. I think you are great as a journalist. Let's go and have a look if they opened any journalism faculty in the region where we live." And I was sure that I was no faculty. So we had this bet. I said, "Okay, I'm going to go with you. If they have any faculty, I will go and enter that." And of course, we're coming in the first year. The opening of, you know, our biggest university in our region, they just announced the entrance test for anybody who wants to study journalism for 5 years. So this is how I actually entered the whole idea of journalism. But from the first year, of studying, I realized how much I love it because it's all about investigation. You know, I was writing a lot of pieces for newspapers, for the local newspapers from the first year, you know, investigating different abuses and different problems which were happening. And from the second year, I started working already on a news TV channel. So that's how it's progressed. But how I transitioned from journalism to human rights activism. Basically, I moved to UK, and after surviving a life-threatening illness, I survived the lung cancer, very rare type, and I promised myself that if I'm going to survive, I want to do something different for people and with people. And at that time, we're talking about 2009, 2008, journalism, as I have seen it from my personal experience, was all about profits, you know, writing about different companies like profiteering, and I really have had enough of that. So the first job that I actually was offered was to work with Black and minority ethnicity women in the UK, and working with them, I realized that except of vocational training and support groups for them, there are a lot of problems, which is actually all coming to gender-based violence. And working with survivors of female genital mutilation, forced marriages, I realized that actually in UK, we don't know much about it. We're talking about second, third generation of migrants who may be bringing these cultural problems to the UK, but actually it's human rights abuse practices. That's how I set up Tamil Bakery and started traveling around the world, working with women in different countries, any issues, you know, starting from bride kidnapping in Kyrgyzstan, female genital mutilation in the midst of Masai Mara, more than 15 countries and issues. So that's really how my journey started, transitioning from journalism to women's rights activism.
Wow. I mean, it's for some of the things you say, I see myself as well as, you know, growing as a journalist. Sometimes it's really hard when or the editor-in-chief make it all about profit, or they want to twist around your headlines, they want to change part in your articles, and you really feel like, oh my God, I don't know if I still want to do this, because I want to be able to write about the things I'm passionate about. And we were saying this just before coming live on this podcast, you know, you still are a journalist because you still write, just you do it at your own terms, which is similar to what I'm doing with Wempower, because I didn't maybe find someone that wanted to publish my articles, and I wanted to feel free, and I wanted other women journalists to feel free to express themselves. So here you go, you know, you come up with your own business, with your own idea, and it's this sense of, as well, of resilience that, you know, we have of like, I don't want to give up on this, but I want to make it that I can empower other people. So it's not just about me writing an article or sharing a story. Has to make a change, have an effect. So
that's
it's curious that you choose bakery to do, yes, to empower women. So how, why bakery, and why Tamu, which I know there is a word in Swahili, but perhaps you can explain us as well a little bit more.
When I was growing up, you see, in Ukraine, the baking, the whole tradition of baking is a huge, but I never was interested in that. And I used to say to my grandmother, oh, I'm not going to touch a dough. It's very sticky. It's disgusting. Never will you see me baking. And funnily enough, when I was recovering from cancer, being far away from my family, I actually found, you know, that baking was helping me, was healing me in emotional level, because, you know, it's already scientifically proved that when you bake, it's kind of like a form of mindfulness. So that's where I started baking. When I went to my first trip to Kenya, in the midst of Masai Mara, imagine there is no electricity, no water. It's like basic conditions. And I was working with girls in a kind of condition of human rights activists. We were doing different kind of activities. And in the midst of one of them, girls asked me, can you please tell us about traditional Ukrainian dishes? So I was telling them about, you know, our dishes, baking, and they said, actually, in our lives, we have never tried a sweet dish, sweet bread or cake. Could you make us something? So we decided to bake a cake, but there was no electricity, so we baked it on a hot sand. It took us all night. We put like basically different lids, different construction, hot sand at the top. And by the morning, the cake, the first sponge, just like a Victoria sponge, was ready. And when girls started eating it, they were dancing, singing around this little fire that we kind of created. And they were singing Tamu, Tamu, Tamu. And I said, what Tamu means? And they said, that means sweet and delicious. So I've realized actually not only that, you know, baking helps me, it can actually help a lot of other people. And the way girls started talking about their problems, about how they run from their families. 9-year-old told me how she was about to get married to 54-year-old, how she went through FGM. I realized that actually baking helps lots of people to heal. So I came back home to the UK, set up Tamu Bakery as a social enterprise. And basically I create my funds by doing a lot of different consultancies for people. Then the money I create, I go to the country, buy a lot of flour, butter, and advertise it as the baking classes. Because another function of calling it Tamu Bakery, in a lot of places where it is dangerous to be a woman, which is the places I choose for my trips, men or patriarchal society would not allow their wives or daughters to come to the classes if I will be empowering them. So it acts as a baking classes or cooking classes where women are allowed to come. And actually, no matter which languages we speak and which problems we have, after a couple of cooking or baking classes, women start sharing their problems. And this is where the time I can help them as an activist.
It's a sort of a women's circle kind of energy, you know?
Yes.
Very, very, very interesting. And in all your trips, you know, your travels, is there a particular, I know that maybe it's hard because I know I will not be able to choose it myself, but is a particular culture or experience that really stayed with you and, I don't know, inspire you even more with Tamu Bakery or inspire you to write about something that really, I don't know, touch you deep?
You know, every single country and every single trip have had a really huge impact on me. You can't say that one country may be like more dangerous or women more abused, because actually in every single place, you know, part of your heart is ripped. But I think one of the recent trips, I went to Nepal and I worked there with 3 different organizations, because usually I partner with different NGOs. And the last one really made a huge impact on me and on my friend. She's a very famous Indian human rights photographer who travels with me to take documents of all the trips, what we're doing with women. We both were left speechless. We came to this women's shelter, and one lady was just the night before rescued from sexual trafficking, human trafficking, and she was basically having a lot of learning difficulties, and you know, she wasn't really herself from the trauma, and she crawled to us and she put my hand into her head and asking me for blessings. And I was really puzzled by that, but the coordinator just explained to us, the last night she was rescued by people from Europe, and in your face she sees that all people who come in here, it's her rescuers or helpers, and the amount of abuse those women are going through, they're unable to talk, they're shaking, you know, sometimes what you come across is really, really leaving an impact. The same happened in Vietnam. We worked with very young girls, let's say adolescent really, who just as well been rescued from sexual trafficking and sexual abuse. That was the same in India, in Rajasthan, women who are going through the worst domestic violence, you can only imagine the same. So, you know, in every place, you just have to learn how to deal with that and where to park this part of your job and not let it to affect you in your real life and your everyday life.
Yeah, that's that really, it is so true. And it's important as well, you know, when we're doing this kind of work to make sure that you keep serving the others. And sometimes it's really hard to separate yourself from some of the stories and realities you see, because you still need to be very fair when you approach a situation. And it's difficult as a journalist, it's even more difficult as a human rights activist. And it's also sometimes to protect them, but also to protect ourselves too, and to keep us going with our work. Going back to your experience as a journalist as well, you move your first steps in Ukraine, then you move to the UK. How was growing up as a journalist in Ukraine, and do you see now that you are a little bit maybe outside the market, any difference, any improvement, as well as specifically when we talk about women in media?
Mm-hmm. It's a very good question. I was actually talking to some of my colleagues about what does it mean nowadays to be a journalist. And, doing my first steps in journalism in Ukraine, I was lucky enough to have this old school of journalists who used to come and teach us. And they used to tell us, as long as you can write a very good piece for the newspaper, you would be able to work in the radio, on TV, because this kind of writing being considered at that time not so difficult. And I agree with that because nowadays we are talking about digital journalism, which is all great, but I learned that people more moving into the blogging rather than the real investigation journalism or real proper writing, what I mean in old school, and they call it journalism. A lot of digital journalism, a lot of, citizen journalism, but we forget about the actual core. And this is for me, I think I was lucky to study 20 years ago that, how to write, what kind of pieces you can write. And I think this is where, yes, today it's outside of the box because all of this, from editors, I get a lot of, can you write how to this or five top tips for that? And it's great, but it's not going to, necessarily work for every single media. So for me, it's, I don't know, I really rarely see nowadays a decent pieces, which may, which work for me as a call for action to go and do something about specific issue. If we're talking specifically about women's rights issue or specific niche journalism. But the world is changing and maybe we need to kind of change for for how things are moving. So, but I agree, that I started working as a newspaper journalist and then moved to the radio. Realized radio actually wasn't for me. It's too snappy, it's too short. But later in life, actually, I worked on the radio station in the UK. But I've actually really enjoyed it because it was, again, my own program. We talked a lot about racism, women's rights problems in the UK. And we've done a huge impact because it was a radio station was based in Cornwall, which is very white, middle class, narrow minded. And the issues which we took in the program were very, very big, kind of like headlines, oh, FGM is happening in Cornwall, or, anti-Semitism happening in Cornwall. So that was, again, big kind of revelation for me that maybe radio didn't work for me at that time, but now it's actually works the same as podcasts. But TV is probably one of my biggest passion, which I love documentary making. And, that's what always will stay with me. And that's, like we say, you never can take TV out of the person. Every time you go, you see, oh, I would have done this this way, or I would have filmed it that way. So I would say that it's probably yes. If you are a bit of like from older generation like me, you probably find it a bit more difficult to fit in with editorial kind of guidelines nowadays.
A little bit more of a slow pace, like cooking a cake in hot sand,
Yes.
no? Did you have any inspiration? Were you inspired by someone while growing up as a journalist? And did you have the opportunity to have a mentor as well throughout your career?
Yes, there are very famous military or like a war correspondent in Ukraine, and he was the first of this kind of way of young or not young, but like a new journalist who was talking a lot about war conflict or war zones. He was traveling a lot around the world, and he came to our university to do a visiting lecture, guest lecture. And I remember how, it's inspired me. And I think a lot of it as well comes where I'm traveling with Tamu, despite it is not like, working as a wartime correspondent, but it's the same adrenaline. It's the same way to go to this dangerous place, to report, to explain, to open these issues to the world. So I remember that I was really, really inspired by him. And now nowadays, again, he's doing a lot of reports about already on the war zone in our own country. And in terms of mentoring, yes, again, I was very lucky. And one of the TV stations where I started off working as a news correspondent was a very, very prominent from older generation presenter, older lady who had her own program. And she always taught me, like during some lunchtime break, we had our desks like opposite of each other. And she used to tell me all these stories from, how it was to be a journalist in 1950s and about the high professionalism. And she always told me, if you can make any person to tell you any kind of their personal story, and you can be this kind of psychologist, then that's the greatest gift that you can get as a journalist, and you can write or you can make this story make headlines. So I remember this lunchtime conversation with a big warmth in my heart, and I was so lucky to get this kind of tips and advice from her, and it's shaped me a lot, you know, in the way I used to work.
And do you remember your first assignment?
Yes, it was very interesting. Again, within my kind of role, women empowerment, the editor of a small newspaper, he said to me, "I've got so many journalists here. I don't need any of your pieces. Tell me one kind of like a snappy line so that I can publish it." And I said, "How about I'm going to the monastery, female monastery, and I stay there for a couple of days, weeks, and write a piece, Why Girls Become Nuns." He said, "Okay, you've got it." So I went, stayed in monastery, interviewed so many different nuns, and we wrote quite an interesting piece. And it was very interesting because, you know, you're going to the monastery and it's a different world. And it was first year of university, still learning, you know, these techniques, how to interview people, how to kind of follow them, how to shadow them, how to see their lives. So it was, it's left a big impact on me as well.
That's maybe is a tip for any other young journalist that is listening to us today. You know, whenever they try to put you off and say, you know, I have no space for you, just, you know, prepare yourself a very quick pitch on something you're passionate about. And I'm sure that if, you know, they feel editors, they feel that when a journalist is really, you know, keen to write about a story, and if they think it's gonna fit into their schedule, they would really, it would really impress, no?
Yes, you know, actually, you reminded me a very interesting story. After working for a year in different newspapers, I decided to try out TV. TV was very competitive market at that time. I'm talking like 2002 in Ukraine. I came to one of the TV stations. They said to me, "Sorry, we don't have any more spaces for any students. What can you offer us?" And I said, "Okay, can I make some teas and coffees?" They said, "Okay, if you want, that's fine." So I used to make tea, coffees, teas, help cameramen to carry the equipment. Then slowly I found myself, I was allowed to come with the journalists to their assignments to shadow them. Then journalists felt sorry for me and said, "Oh, you've been with us like for so many months. Can you write the same story as us? We will check and correct your stories the way it should be written." That's the way I moved into that department. Then they realized one day journalist was sick. They allowed me to go and kind of film and write the coverage for the news. Then I was offered a different job. I was offered straight away to write my own stories, but in educational department. So I would say that yes, perseverance is the best way. And you know, if you can kind of put your teeth into this and really show them that you're really passionate and you allow and you're prepared to put a lot of hours and antisocial hours. I believe that this hasn't changed in this industry, then you will succeed.
I agree with that. And since we are on the line of the tips, do we want to share some more tips for journalists that are listening to us now? Maybe, you know, they are going to send their first CV, they just finished university, or they are about to, they're looking for their first job assignment, even freelancing, because right now you work more on a freelance basis. So let's share some more tips.
Tips, I will say do persistent, and in order to make your first break, basically deal with that like this 5 second elevator pitch, you know, just write at the beginning of your email or as your first phrase when you're talking to somebody, I don't know, online or on the phone, something that can really be worth of their time and show them that you're really prepared to work hard if you really need this first break. And be prepared again to work all sorts of hours. Be prepared to be passionate and never kind of leave this passion because sometimes you feel, oh, they're not going to publish my story. They don't want to work with me. Keep on, you know, like fueling your passion no matter what. Maybe, and keep writing. I would say that writing is a muscle you have to exercise. It's no matter what, no matter how maybe down you feel, or, you know, this place said no, this place said no, but maybe place number 100 will tell you yes. And that's the break that you need. This is for the really my tips, I would say, for people who just starting today.
They're all very great, and I remember those are were the tips as well. My mentor at university used to tell me, don't give up, just keep bothering people, even if you think you become annoying. And this is, what I'm doing right now, and probably perhaps as well because I belong to a, oh, let's say, an older generation of journalists. I am more into, I'm gonna go and speak to that person rather than send maybe an email, or like to connect in person and just, hear me out. This is what I can do for you. And if I cannot do that, what can I do to help you? So then I help myself to get into the role I want. So, completely agree.
Yes. You know, recently, just going to interrupt you quickly. Recently, I had a very interesting conversation. I was at some event and I quickly picked up, a pen and a paper and started writing something. And the gentleman looked at me and said, "Oh, I could see you from this older generation of journalists that you always have with your paper and a pen, no matter of technology." And sometimes I find that these ideas can come to your head. So always as well carry with your paper and a pen because you never know what you can see. It's similar to, being a writer. So you kind of have to put these ideas, and sometimes this scrap piece of papers can really help you when you're really stuck for ideas.
I do still have some old notebooks when I was a little bit younger with like, oh, I would like to write about this story. I still have the notebook. Maybe I haven't write the story yet, so keep it because you never
Yes,
know.
keep it.
Or perhaps then in the future it can become material for a book.
Yes, that's true.
If let's go back a little bit as to Tamu Bakery. What are the projects coming up right now for you? I know that you travel, you move a bit around the globe. You are based in the Middle East, which is definitely not the right place as well sometimes to be a woman. So any future project coming, any particular things that you would like to share with us today?
Yeah, right now I'm working a lot on different training programs regarding gender-based violence, writing for professionals in the UK, people who work as the first responders of different types of GBV. So recently I wrote a few training courses and moving on to the really big one, which will include breast ironing, which is making headlines right now as well in the UK. And patrimonial type of violence. So new type of violences needs to be studied. So definitely we'll be looking into more project moving to the countries within the region I am in. But actually talking about the Middle East, the Middle East is changing a lot, and it's like a lot of my colleagues here, they say it's exciting time to be a woman here in the Middle East because a lot of things definitely moving so fast. And some countries in the Middle East which you think, oh, they are very fast kind of, moving and they don't need any help, they actually need a lot of help. And the countries which you thought also closed and they need some help, they're actually fine. And definitely living in the Middle East taught me that, for example, the way we see, we look at the forced marriages in the UK and the way they actually existed here for so many centuries, actually sometimes they work, and it's not necessarily we need to come and, kind of like push our ideas on women here. But I would say that women in the Middle East more in the need of economical empowerment, a lot of like, NVQ maybe courses, a lot of like teaching them about soft skills, for example, negotiation. They have no idea, maybe in some of the countries they need more help, like how to integrate in a male society at work, how to speak to men, how to speak to opposite sex, So in terms of future projects, definitely staying in the business region, and of course helping a lot my native Ukraine. I'm just getting involved with the programs again, helping women who survived rape as a weapon of war, as it makes headlines again, unfortunately, in the world. So I would say that it's priority Middle East and Ukraine, but I'm open for any, kind of like invites. Recently, colleagues from Kosovo, where I used to work on a lot of programs, invited me back. They're saying that, we're starting new programs. Maybe perhaps you can come here into Bosnia Herzegovina. So, the vast world is changing and the problems change. What you plan today may be changing tomorrow.
And women, there are so many women that need support all over the world, and they need to, to feel valued and empowered in their own, in their own skin, in their own place, without too much interruption from external cultures or, behaviors, but just, help them to be a woman where they are. with what they can actually bring to their culture and their community. So
Yes, and sometimes, you know, we look at maybe like, oh, there are the protests in Iran or there is a war in Ukraine. But actually, if we look into what's going on in the UK, there is a severe endemic of domestic violence. Yesterday, been published a new report, you know, which is not making headlines due to the different news kind of taking over in the UK, you know. So, for example, like if I would have been right now based in the UK, I definitely would have been doing a lot of work with the survivors of domestic violence. So you always have to look in every country where you're based. There is always some type of gender-based violence, whether it is domestic violence, intimate partner violence, you know, forced marriage, bride kidnapping, or any others.
Well, I agree with you on this. Like me, I'm from Italy, and I don't think that Italy is doing very, very well neither in terms of women's rights and gender-based violence. There is like already in 2022, over 60 women died because of gender-based violence. So, and you know, Italy, maybe people will not think about that country in that way. And same for the UK. I remember a couple of years ago, I interview a woman originally from Pakistan, and we talk a lot about forced marriage. And, you know, we even with some other African women that are living here in the UK, we talk about, you know, genital mutilation, which you think maybe, yeah, it belongs to that specific culture, but outside of the UK borders. But no, actually, no, it does exist here as well. And we need to do something to raise awareness on the problem and try to see how we can, you know, stop it from happening even here. So it's that the work you do and the work that many other activists are doing is to put the light on a problem, on an issue, but also help us to see it that it's not too far away from home sometimes. Because
yes.
Exactly. It's very easy to say, oh yeah, but it's happening, it's in Nepal, it's in India, oof, it's so far away from home, you know, we just shut blind, like we don't want to see. But then when someone tells us, maybe your neighbor or maybe someone, you know, in your city is going through the same situation, then
yes. And I always remind people, always remember that this is human rights abuse. This is against any human rights, women's rights. It's not just a cultural issue, religious issue, or you know, like I've been training multi-agency staff in the UK for years on FGM, forced marriage, honor-based killings, and we have moved amazingly. It's been a time, I remember in the UK, when if you run away from your family, who are about maybe to force you to marry or to perform FGM on you, and your family is filing report for you as a missing person, and the police officer found you, they used to take you straight away to your family or interview you in front of your family. How much campaigning have been done? How much training have been done for police officers? Now it's not allowed. They have to interview the girl separately from the family. And if she requires any protection, they're filing special protective order and the girl gets into the safe place. So all these things, they do move, because sometimes you feel like, you know, oh, where all this activism is going, or where all these campaigns, where all this training is going, you know? And I remember in 2009, 2010, doing these kind of courses again in Como, a lot of people would stand up and shout and say, why do I have to care about their culture? I'm Cornish myself. Why do you teach me about that? You know, but nowadays things are changing and people more respectful, people more aware, people know how to help. You know, look at the campaigns like pharmacies in the UK, Call for Annie, you know, where people can come and just say one word and they would be helped. So we're moving, you know, there are the problems, but don't be like depressed about that and think that things are changing, because there are a lot of people doing the work.
Yeah, and I think as well, coming out of the pandemic of COVID and isolation and lockdown, many of the strides that perhaps we made before 2020, they got lost, but somehow we step a little bit backwards on some issue, because when, you know, people in lockdown, in isolation, no one really knew what was happening in their houses. And, you know, we took some steps back, I think, in...
Yes, and reports are coming out right now on domestic violence, on homicides, femicides. So you have a look at the statistics, intimate partner violence, especially within UK, and it's really bad. You know, that COVID took it kind of bad stride on people. And it's, you know, people were at homes, people were not able to use the phone to contact services, you know, people were short on staff, like police officers. So yes, it's definitely will be coming out soon in more kind of details, and we will see how much more work needs to be done.
Even for the UK, I think I saw, well, it was not too recent, but the connection between gender-based violence and football, like the way the
Yes.
result of a football match would have impact on the atmosphere at home, and whether or not the husband, the partner, the boyfriend will go home completely drunk and abuse, beat, or injure their wife or girlfriend just because they lost a football match,
Yes.
which is
Yes, yeah,
insane.
that's a very well known fact. That's what we always talk about in training as well. Don't forget, yes, these things can take a short temper and anger management. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. We are moving towards the end of this beautiful interview, and I'm really happy about everything we shared so far. I have a few last questions before we wrap up, and I wanted to ask you if there was an advice you would give to your younger self, what would that be?
Don't work so fast. Don't move in a kind of this crazy schedule, just to satisfy some editor or head of TV channel, because in the end you will pay a price with your health. So I would say just always take care of yourself. And you can't make every single penny of the world, and you can't just please everybody. Just make sure that you take time and concentrate on your niches, which you are really passionate about.
Go at your own pace, no kind of things,
Yes.
like slow it down. Sometimes
Yes.
it's good, and we forgot about that with some of the job we're doing. And any advice you would like to share with all the women and also men that are listening to this podcast today?
Oh, it's a good one. No matter which problems you face in life, or maybe which barriers and obstacle, no matter of profession or field that you've chosen, there is always some help available, and there are always some people there. Despite economical problems, political problems, every country right now in the world are facing, there are always some NGOs, activists, people, your friends, your family who are able to help you. Don't stay silent. No matter what it is, if it's a FGM, if it is a depression, mental health, any kind of problems, they all can be helped. I know that there are, kind of the news are shifting to covering specific stories and we forget about others. And sometimes people feel, oh, I'm not important, but no, there is always help. And just always, the journey starts with the first step. So no matter what people are facing, what people are passionate about, or whether they're starting their career or they're changing their career, or they worry about their children, what they will do, just keep persevering and there is a help there.
I agree. Thank you for sharing this. And you remember at the beginning of the interview I asked you what is that you're fighting for. So the question here to close this conversation is, what is that you wish to stop fighting for?
I wish to stop fighting for getting this time on air or in newspapers to talk about gender-based violence. I wish that there, of course, would be no gender-based violence to talk about. But like I said at the beginning, I don't think it will be possible anytime soon because of such a wide problem. But because GBV, as soon as you mention it to people, it's not important. It's a difficult subject. Why would we touch it? We will upset our funders. So I wish that there would be no such a narrative, and no matter what the problems are, like we used to have with mental health before, it was a taboo, it was a big issue not to touch. I want the same to happen to GBV in every single country of the world. And I want as well that specific journalists or activists would not face the problems of xenophobia because where they're based. Because I see more and more often of this narrative, or you're from such and such country, we don't want this, because it is too political to be a person, or being maybe a woman or being activist or belong to a specific tribe or specific country. So I wish that we're no longer fighting for that, and people give us the time and the place of their newspapers, their blog or their website to kind of shout about this issue, to stop them faster, so that we're no longer having this conversation about how it is dangerous to be a woman in maybe 20 years' time.
Thank you, Jana, so much for being with us. for sharing your story, your experience. If you want to discover more about Jana, you can visit her website. It's www.tamubakery.org, and you can also get in touch with her if you want to discover more about her projects, or get involved somehow. And thank you again so much for
Thank
being
you for
with us.
having me.
You're
Thank you.
very welcome. Thank you again.
If this was your first time listening to Wempower Podcast, thank you for taking the time. You can find us on Podbean and Spotify. Subscribe to our newsletter on wempower.co and keep up to date with all the future projects on all our social media at Wempower UK. Thank you to all the women out there that are following and supporting Wempower. I will continue to bring to you powerful, inspiring and positive stories from all over the world. Don't forget, together we empower women. This is Ilaria for Wempower Podcast. Until next time.